Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuning in live this Friday, the 13th, Friday, July 13th, 2018. It does feel like Friday today also. Felt like Friday yesterday to me. Feels kind of like Friday today too, but I don't know. Strange. We'll see what happens Friday the 13th. So welcome to Road Warrior Radio. I'm your host, Chris Hinckley. We are all road warriors, those who esteem ourselves to be. And as always, feel free to dive into the chat area at roadwarriorradio.chattango.com for interesting and lively discussion. Interesting times, to be sure. Lots of strange things happening. Let's see. Richie from Boston is making 10 videos on the New World Order, how we got to where we're getting. And I don't know about you, but it's feeling like it feels more and more like Pike's letter to Mazzini and the scenario that was outlined in the most prophetic letter never written. And a few things, you know, this collision of political Zionism and political Islam together, that happens every day in spite of the fact that, I mean, it's the greatest illusion, this whole circus that's being orchestrated and perpetrated on the American people and the people at large. It's just incredible. You know, this charade, this hoax of Zionism and the counterfeit Israel collided against, or allegedly, but not really, behind the scenes they're cooperating, and not so much behind the scenes. A number of folks, including TrueStream Media, have done some great videos on that recently, proving that even the mainstream headlines tell us that, you know, for example, Israel and Saudi Arabia are buddies when it comes to certain business deals and other things. So if you're so deeply devout, so deeply religious, and so resolute on certain issues, then why are you found, you know, in bed with the enemy, basically? That seems odd, doesn't it? And of course the answer is because they're not really enemies. That's just a show for all of us to suck us into a contrived conflict. So there's that aspect of it. And in the same sense that people are not aware of what this monster known as Zionism really represents, it's nothing good. In the same sense, people are, especially in this society, are largely unable to distinguish between Islam and political Islam, most notably, speaking of political Islam, Wahhabism, Salafism, and Deobandism. What are those? What do they represent? Where do they come from? And it's an important distinction because, after all, it's out there, even on the whitewashed, sanitized version of history, the Wikipedia entry for the Salafi movement. Under the section titled Views on Extremism, that section is still there. Salafism is sponsored globally by Saudi Arabia. Okay, who cares? What is that? And this ideology is used to justify the violent acts of jihadi Salafi groups that include Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Boko Haram, and the Al-Shabaab. Well, then, I guess it is important after all, isn't it? And it's sponsored by Saudi Arabia, so why do we consider Saudi Arabia one of our dearest allies in the region? That's odd, don't you think? Continuing, in addition, Saudi Arabia prints textbooks for schools and universities to teach Salafism, as well as recruit international students from Egypt, Bangladesh, Indonesia, Africa, and the Balkans to help spread Salafism in their local communities. Why would you do that when this ideology, as the sentence just prior states, this ideology is used to justify the violent acts of jihadi Salafi groups, including Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab? Why would you be friends, bedfellows with a country that does something like that? I thought we were combating that kind of stuff. And then there's Saudi Arabia's, you know, Center to Combat Violent Extremism. Remember the orb? So that's odd. Isn't all that odd? But most people, this is just out in plain sight. It's common knowledge, and yet no one knows it, which is very strange. So, you know, it really is sort of the open conspiracy in a sense, as H.G. Wells wrote. So Albert Pike allegedly wrote a letter to Giuseppe Mazzini, the great Masonic Italian liberator. Ha ha. Tongue in cheek. And in this letter, August 15, 1871, Pike allegedly wrote about colliding these forces together. And in so doing, you know, these movements, political Zionism and political Islam, would mutually destroy each other and wearing the nations out in the process, because everyone's drawn into this conflict. Why? Why? It's interesting, you know, you listen to young people. There's a video, I forget what it's for, I was listening to it, some bad guy advertisement, a young man who was wounded in combat, third or fourth generation military, you know, very proud family, blah, 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 but not very bright, honestly, and I apologize, but, you know, after that many generations, especially, you know, the generation that came through the Vietnam War, maybe his parents should have told him a thing or two. You'd think that these people would get it figured out, or is it just Stockholm syndrome that is so deep, so pervasive, that you're unwilling to confront the uncomfortable reality that maybe like, who was it? Benjamin Franklin said, there never was a good war or a bad peace. You know, I've mentioned John Adams' letter to Hezekiah Niles back in 1818 recently, that, you know, that phrase, what do we mean by the American Revolution? Well, in that, I think, a provocative irony, a provocative footnote, that when John Adams talks about what everyone else refers to as a revolution, the bloody conflict, it's not good. And he has some words to that effect. It has had very adverse consequences all around the world. That's interesting. Coming from a guy who says that the mindset, so to speak, behind all of this is what really represented the American Revolution. And so how did we get there without the conflict? And yet, in spite of all of that, he says, states very openly, that the conflict was not good. It had very adverse consequences and repercussions. But we forget these lessons, don't we? Do we forget them, or do we not learn them? Are we encouraged to not pass them on to posterity? I would submit we do. You know, I've said it before, but it's like those roads in the wilderness. If you've seen logging roads, for example, that, and roads cut into the mountains that are then shut off, it's not long until the roads are unrecognizable. It's not long. It's just a few short years until you can't even tell there was a road there. So, you know, again, in that sense, I think it's interesting that John Adams reminds us to keep that road well paved. The radical change in the principles, opinions, sentiments, and affections of the people was the real American Revolution. And by what means this great and important alteration in the religious, moral, political, and social character of the people of the 13 colonies, all distinct, unconnected, and independent of each other, was begun, pursued, and accomplished. Begun, pursued, and accomplished. I keep going back to James Otis. I've been harping on that this independence season, this Independence Day season. And so by what means this great and important alteration in the religious, moral, political, and social character of the people was begun, pursued, and accomplished. It is surely interesting to humanity to investigate and perpetuate to posterity, not just to the colonists, to humanity. To this end, he wrote, it is greatly to be desired that young men, young gentlemen of letters in all states, especially in the 13 original states, would undertake the laborious but certainly interesting and amusing task of searching and collecting all the records, pamphlets, newspapers, and even handbills, which in any way contributed to change the temper and views of the people and compose them into an independent nation. Why do you suppose he said that? These may have, he explained later in his letter, these may be of use to posterity, not only in this nation, but in South America and all other countries. Might be important to remember. Today, who knows? Who knows what it means to be American? Anyway, back to Pike's letter. This conflict, colliding these two specious forces together, people don't even know, can't identify, can't distinguish, you know, who is able to distinguish between political Zionism and Orthodox Judaism, for example. And it's a very clear and simple distinction. You know, Zionism, I think Dorothy Thompson actually put it best. The reporter you've never heard of, compliments of Allison Weir over at If Americans Knew. We have these clues from history. Dorothy Thompson was considered, she was recognized in 1939 as the second most influential woman in America, next to Eleanor Roosevelt, by Time Magazine. Very influential journalist for those ladies who think that, you know, we're finally becoming emancipated. Yeah, right. Shirley Chisholm ran for president back in the 70s, but you don't hear much about that these days, do you? Anybody can do it. Dick Gregory ran for president in the 60s. Probably could have won if there was a real election. So her Wikipedia entry, the Zionist nonsense, is sort of a footnote. Fame and controversy. Huh, understatement. In 1941, Thompson wrote, "Who Goes Nazi?" for Harper's Magazine. She was a key keynote speaker at the Biltmore Conference, and by war's end was regarded as one of the most effective spokespersons for Zionism. Okay. And she's celebrated in the media. Thompson switched her views round radically after a trip to Palestine in 1945. Uh-oh. And ran into difficulties, including accusations of anti-Semitism, which she strongly rebuffed. Yeah, you don't understand what you're talking about. What does anti-Semitism mean? Who are the Shemites? Where are the Shemites? After being warned that hostility toward Israel, which one, the British Israel or the biblical Israel, was in the American press world, quote unquote, almost a definition of professional suicide. She eventually concluded that Zionism was a recipe for what? Talk about that when we come back. Stick around.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing. knowledge, and knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
Welcome back. So Dorothy Thompson, what did she say? She was a celebrated Zionist mouthpiece for a long time. Again, 1939, Time magazine recognized her. This is, 80 years ago, but it's the same story, same rinse and repeat story today. What was happening at the time that our parents, grandparents, great-grandparents were unsuccessful in effectively passing along? The game telephone, you get a little ways down the line and the message is completely different. We've lost that signal, and it's been disrupted by noise, and along the way, a counterfeit signal, which is an oxymoron, has been surreptitiously inserted, introduced. Anyway, celebrated, recognized by Time Magazine in 1939 as the second most influential woman in America, next to the First Lady, Eleanor Roosevelt. And so what happened? She did a 180 after a trip to Palestine in 1945, and again, as the Wikipedia entry states, ran into difficulties, including accusations of anti-Semitism, which she strongly rebuffed. Be like, you know, calling Alison Weir anti-Semitic, or the Naturi Carta, or, you know, they're anti-Semitic. Really? What does that term mean? Please define it for me. I'm very curious to hear what you mean when you use that term. Which she strongly rebuffed after being warned that hostility toward Israel, again, which one, in the American press world, almost the definition of professional suicide, quote unquote. She eventually concluded that Zionism was a recipe for perpetual war. There you go. There you go. Susan Hertog wrote a book published in 2011, Dangerous Ambition, Rebecca West and Dorothy Thompson, New Women in Search of Love and Power. And this is one of the points that Susan Hertog made in her book. Anyway, it's interesting. Dorothy Thompson died in 1961 at age 67 in Lisbon, Portugal. And one has to wonder how influential her marriage to Sinclair Lewis, you know, they thought they were free, was on her worldview, her political views, her worldview. They divorced in 1942 and married in 28, divorced in 42. But she passed away in 1961, and her marriage to Sinclair Lewis was the subject of Sherman Yellen's Broadway play Strangers, which opened in 1979 and closed after 9 performances, which is interesting. And I don't know, just a further sort of anecdotal note of history on a Friday. Sherman Yellen, one of the, you know, most prolific American playwrights and screenwriters you've never heard of. Some interesting stuff, you know? Interesting stuff. You might glance at his Wikipedia entry, for example, and you'll see kind of what I mean. I'll leave it at that. So anyway, this conflict, what I'm going to talk about, things seem to be shaping up more and more in the fashion that this letter from Pike to Mazzini that never happened but is the most prophetic letter never written suggests. And it's already 80 years old at this point, at least. You know, the first inference of it publicly that we're aware of, at least I'm aware of, was in 1925. It's been almost 100 years now. And just seems to be coming more and more true. How is that possible? Even if it was a fiction that was created back then. Isn't that interesting? How are world events shaping up in precisely the fashion? And then, you know, of course, that not to mention the Second and the First World Wars that happened after 1925 and were unprecedented. How does one explain all of that other than it's a fairy tale? So, and, you know, of course, if you listen to folks like James Perloff and Eustace Mullins and, you know, Ralph Epperson and many, many others, you realize David Irving, Ernst Zundel, you know, whether you agree with his political views or not, there is a historical veracity there that gets ignored, swept under the rug. Why is that? Very odd, don't you think? Anyway, this conflict Pike allegedly wrote about, unleashing the nihilists and the atheists, we shall provoke a formidable social cataclysm which in all its horror will show clearly to the nations the effect of absolute atheism, origin of savagery and the most bloody turmoil. You know, Jaron Lanier has been talking about the effects of social media, and he was on The View not too long ago. And that's, you know, it's interesting to say the least, the correlation here to a letter that was allegedly never written and this conflict that's shaping up, the tools that social media provides to accomplish such a thing. And I've talked, you know, for example, about what happened in Greece and how we're led to believe that, you know, Twitter was a mechanism for a spontaneous uprising and other bullcrap nonsense like that. Anyway, last month, like I said, Jaron Lanier was kind of running around here and there, and we talked about some of that. We've played his latest TED Talk. It's funny that you can't find any others. He just keeps kind of seeming to vanish, even though he doesn't. Writes a book, and is anybody listening? I think some people are. But, you know, if you can stand a few minutes of The View, I want to play the clip of Jaron Lanier on The View last month. I can't really stand it too much, but what he says is provocative. And, you know, I mentioned that he was on Channel 4 News. Title of that video was Jaron Lanier Interview on How Social Media Ruins Your Life. It's what he's been saying. I mean, you know, he's been trying to tell us, and you know, he's one of the most credible voices in the discussion. He's been there. He understands what he's talking about. He understands the mechanics behind the wizard's curtain. And so, are people listening? What is happening? Listen to this. Go ahead, please.
If you are scrolling through your social media feed while you're watching us, you need to put the damn phone down and listen up. Because our next guest has written an incredible book about how much it's wrecking our lives. Please welcome author of 10 Arguments for Deleting Your Social Media Accounts Right Now, Jaron Lanier.
Hey. So,
Jaron. The book lays out 10 really great ideas of how we can take care of ourselves. But you say that the media companies have one goal in mind, and that's to change our behavior. What does that mean?
Yeah, okay. So you know how these services are free. You log on to Facebook, it's free. So the reason it's free is that there's like somebody else off to the side who's paying, but it's not like when a TV ad, it's a different kind of ad. They're paying to modify your behavior because you're being constantly watched, and then what you see, the ads you see, the feed you get is constantly adjusted using techniques that have been established by scientific research for over a century to get you addicted and then to get you to change a little bit. And you know, the problem with that is that addiction has consequences. It makes people cranky. Mm-hmm. It makes them irritable. And when we talk about bullying, it's a side effect of this process. Mm-hmm. You know, so until the companies can change their business model to something else, this is going to keep on happening. And that doesn't mean the good stuff on social media isn't real. It is. But there's this other machine behind the scenes that is really doing a lot of damage.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we talked earlier in Hot Topics about online bullying. Mm-hmm. Why is it that more hasn't been done to control or to get rid of some of this behavior online?
Yeah, you know, it's a funny thing. So I'm a Silicon Valley guy. I do companies. I love Silicon Valley. And all my friends there don't let their kids use the products that we make.
That's shocking.
Yeah.
See that?
And you know... As a father, I'm trying to cut a middle ground because I don't want to create a rebellious kid. I want them to find their own lessons. But, you know, it really comes down to the stupid business model. You know, like as long as anytime two people connect, the only way we make money is if there's a third person off to the side. Sometimes like a weird intelligence warfare unit reporting to Mr. Putin. But whoever it is, there's always somebody out there.
Yeah, right.
There's always somebody out there trying to get into the middle of your business. And it makes you a little nervous. It makes you a little sad. It makes you anxious. It makes you insecure. But that's part of the game. See, every addict has that problem. Every single addict goes through that cycle. Whether it's a drug or gambling, that's always part of the deal. Hmm. Yeah.
So what do we do?
Yeah.
Well, okay, here's what I'm asking people to do. I know a lot of people feel like they couldn't possibly quit. And I know a lot of people are addicted. And I know there's no place to go. And all your friends are there and your family photos and all that. I realize I'm in a way asking for something hopeless, and yet all it takes is a small minority of the country to get off this thing, just to get some perspective, to open up the conversation. Look, we have a president who's addicted. I don't know if any of you knew him in the old days. I knew him before he had...
Yeah, we know.
Yeah, he didn't used to be quite as insecure, quite as cranky, quite looking for a fight all the time. That's his addiction talking. All right. And so the thing is, until...
What's he addicted to? Power?
Twitter.
He's addicted to Twitter.
And a lot of other things.
Well, he always is addicted to power. Power isn't the same kind of thing, because power isn't playing a deliberate game with you. Hmm. See, behind the scenes at companies like Twitter and Facebook, there's actually computer programs playing a game with you to make you that way.
Let me ask you something. Is he addicted to lying also? He seems to be addicted to that.
I'd say he's more addicted to lying than he used to be. I think he's always been a bit of a con man.
He's raised the ante.
He's always had a bit of that thing about him. He didn't used to be this bad. Yeah. You know, honestly, like this is his addiction talking. And this is going to keep on happening until we can see. And you know, the other thing I want to say is young people, the greatest gift that you can have for yourself is self-knowledge. Mm. And until you can at least experience life outside of the manipulation machine, you can't know yourself as well. So at least while you're young, take 6 months off the stuff and then you can decide. Right. I don't know you. I don't know what's best for you. But you have to know yourself.
She's freaking out.
Six months is a very long time. And I believe that technology is killing me. And I think everything you're saying is 100% valid. But what do you say to someone like me? I mean, I met my husband on Twitter. So
there are good things about it.
The good things are totally real. Mm. Nobody would deny that. And see, this is what's so, it's like a sandwich of good and bad. But the thing is, we don't need the bad stuff. So, yeah, I'm asking you, it's a huge investment, 6 months to learn about yourself. I know, it's a lot, but, you know, all I can say is I think if you do it, you'll really find it
worth
it.
You know, there are a lot of good things, but there are some bad things, and they happened in the last election with Facebook and Twitter and the interference from Russia, for example.
Yeah,
what are we doing now to prevent that? That's a good question.
You know...
How do we
We're doing forward? Squat to prevent it from happening. You know, and you know why? It's because as long as the whole system is run on this, like, manipulation in secret, it's like rolling out a red carpet to all the worst people in the world, you know? And honestly, a lot of the folks at the companies are good people. They're my friends, and they're doing their best to pick, you know, do little tiny changes. Like, they try to get rid of the fake people, but they can't.
You have to come back. It's that time. You have to come back because it wasn't enough.
Yeah.
Thanks to Jared Lanier, members of the audience. Honey, y'all are getting the book. I'm telling you. Read it. 10 arguments for deleting your social media accounts right now. We want you to have a great day. Take a little time to enjoy the news.
So there you go. That is a, you know, it's the usual you-know-what sandwich of stuff. Speaking of sandwiches, you know, the sandwich that Jaron Lanier mentions is basically an arsenic-laced sandwich. And so, you know, I mean, what kind of fool tries to advocate or lobby for the benefit of an arsenic sandwich, basically? And that's what he's saying. It's interesting that there isn't more shock, horror, and outrage and questions. Well, what do you mean? Like, what research that has shown over the last 100 years? And who and where can we read more about this? And why isn't that common knowledge? He makes a reference that is sort of downplayed and marginalized and inferred or implicitly construed as sensational or anecdotal. And he's not being any of that. He's being very literal. So, you know, it's interesting. And just as a parenthetical aside, so on the subject of Russia and Russian hacking, the recent conversation is interesting, specifically Jim Jordan's appearance yesterday, I think it was, on Hannity, in the last couple of days for sure. Jim Jordan's remarks, maybe we'll play that clip, on Peter Strzok and talking to Strzok and Bruce Orr, you know, basically Bruce Orr at DOJ handing however much of the Steele dossier to the FBI, his wife Nellie obviously involved, being, you know, at Fusion GPS. And so the unwitting masses get a sort of glimpse, but it's all theater. This is all theater too. They get a glimpse into, you know, they think behind the wizard's curtain. Anyway, that's all a put up job. I mentioned yesterday, and I mentioned regularly, first of all, the Yahoo News article behind the hack on Yahoo, Russian agents who had been courted by FBI. So that's the Obama Comey FBI. And are we not curious or concerned about that? That just kind of went away. That was last year. That story was published March 15, 2017. Where did that go? And, you know, again, I always mention that Warren Olney interview back in 2009, and maybe I sound like a stuck record, and that's fine. But it's interesting that there were some shocking admissions made in that interview almost 10 years ago now, to the effect basically that these so-called hackers, it's all same team. It's the intelligence agencies that are all working together. There are no countries. That's just a myth. You know, Five Eyes isn't reserved to, you know, Western NATO allies. You know, it's that sort of concept basically. And that interview, another czar at the Obama White House that you know, where Warren only interviewed Jim Lewis at CSIS, Paul Light, John Arquilla, Rand, and so on, Tom Kellerman, top level cybersecurity guy. Like I always say, those are the who's who of cybersecurity. And for a guy like Warren Olney to have them on his broadcast would be, I don't know, it's very odd, to say the least. I mean, what I usually say is, well, anyway, it's odd, to say the least. And what was the other point? As far as, oh, I know what it was. Here's something interesting. As far as creating addiction, and, you know, again, no curiosity, no outrage, no, oh my goodness, are you kidding? What research? Where can we find this out? It's true. This is crazy. This all needs to be shut down. None of that. If it was a, you know, an illicit drug factory, well, then we would do something about it. But because the perception is that, you know, it's an arsenic-laced sandwich and the lettuce is probably good, and who knows, maybe the arsenic won't kill us. So, you know, it's harmful, but maybe we'll, you know, get away fairly unscathed. It's just ridiculous, the mental gymnastics one has to do to try to justify all this nonsense. Anyway, so the interesting sort of anecdotal reference that I was going to make is you'll hear, if you listen to any of the tech kind of stuff, you'll hear the language. There's some parroting, but you know, especially if you watch like the Google developer stuff. And you know, speaking of all of that, I've mentioned things. You know, Mark Zuckerberg testifies before Congress and says, "Oh no, we don't have thing. We don't program things to listen to people when they don't want to be listened to." Basically, which is absolute hogwash. And I'll prove it to you. Go to dialogflow.com, and you will see that not only is that not true, but Google has libraries and tools available for you to, you know, create your own Google Assistant chatbot. And there are all kinds of – I see them all the time on YouTube, these talks, you know, these videos that people are doing. Create your own chatbot. Why would I want to do that? I don't want to create a chatbot. I think people should talk to each other. They've forgotten how, the lost art of interpersonal communication. Look at these kids these days, millennials who, you know, this girl, "Oh, I met my husband on Twitter." You mean you can't go out and actually see a person and shake their hand and introduce yourself? "Pleased to meet you." You know, I'm reminded of Irving Berlin's White Christmas when I think Bing Crosby is introduced to one of the ladies in the show, and her response to their introduction is "mutual, I'm sure." Yeah. Anyway, the lost art of interpersonal communication. So Dialogue Flow is just a sort of anecdotal aside. Anyway, in these talks, one of the things that I'm talking about, there was a series of videos Google Developers YouTube channel put out last year, best practices for actions on Google, and they did a number of short videos on how to create an app for the Google Assistant that uses their tools, basically, so you can create a chatbot or a, you know, an app for the Google Assistant. And it's interesting. Listen, if we're ready with that, I want to play just the first like 30 seconds of that and listen to the language that's used, which is obviously scripted by someone. For what purpose? If that's ready, go ahead, please.
Hi, welcome to our new series of videos that will bring you news and best practices about actions on Google. I'm Ido Green, a developer advocate for actions on Google. I love to have entrepreneurs and developers to be more productive. In this video, I'm going to show you how to build an app for the Google Assistant. Cool? Apps for Google Assistants are a gateway for your users to engage with your services through Google Home, Android phones,
okay,
iPhones.
That's and in enough. The future, did you catch that? Did you catch that? Google Assistant, cool apps for Google Assistant. You know, Google apps are a Google Assistant are a gateway. The cool apps for Google Assistant are a gateway for your users. Who uses that kind of language? A gateway for your users. Pretty funny, huh? And I always find it interesting that, you know, in video series like these, for example, this video, you know, they have decided to use folks like Ido Green, who is not, you know, the most fluent in English or the most easy to understand for the rest of us, you know, who were born in the States. It's interesting. But anyway, did you catch that language? The cool apps for Google Assistant are a gateway for your users. Who has users? Drug dealers? What is a gateway? You know, that is a pejorative in many contexts, isn't it? Funny how that works. Which reminds me also of that article I mentioned earlier this week, Kai Stinchcomb's April 5th article, Blockchain Isn't as not only crappy technology, but a bad vision for the future. And that quote, there is no single person in existence who had a problem they wanted to solve, discovered that an available blockchain solution was the best way to solve it, and therefore became a blockchain enthusiast. And Max Yankoff commented, have you heard about drug dealers? Exactly. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com. Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back. Real fast, in the final moments of this first hour here, I'm looking at the TrueStream Media videos on YouTube, and there's that video. I forget what the title of it, but the engineering of a society through basically Norbert Wiener and cybernetics methodology. It's over a year ago. I don't think it was 2 years ago. I don't remember what the title was, but I want to say it was within the last 12 to 18 months. Anyway, the board op and I are having a sort of side conversation and into the break and stuff on this subject, Ido Green in particular. And so he said, I'm pretty sure this guy, Ido Green, is head engineer. The guy in the clip that we just played is head engineer for Netflix now. That's not troubling or anything, which is a great way to put that. Yep, director of engineering at Netflix. So my question is, engineering of technology or engineering of you? Or both? Or, you know, some combination thereof. Who uses that terminology? Gateway for users. And then he says Netflix algorithm has gotten worse to me over the years, and I think everyone would say that. But has it, or is it working as planned? You know, again, this gets back to the engineering. I wish I could put my finger on the video that I'm thinking of, because if you haven't seen it, you should. And how that, you know, there have been think, for example, about the admissions at Facebook over the last several years, back to 2012, for example, now 11, 12, and coming forward, how they keep saying, yeah, you know, about all that. We were experimenting on people and trying to see if we could do certain things. I mean, from Zeynep Tufekci's admission that, you know, her TED Talk last year, we're building a dystopia just to make people click on ads. And she explained in her TED Talk that engineers, again, of what or whom, had been trying to see if they could turn machine learning loose to predict the onset of mania. And it actually worked, but in a way that she said, didn't know how it worked. You have that. You have all of this stuff. I mean, Sean Parker's Axios interview. And then what's her name? Oh, gosh, what is her name? Obama lackey. Carol Davidson. Her article back in 2012. The Tarkus project and so forth, you know? The Cambridge Analytica stuff, a la the republishing of the article over at Stanford Research Center, the data that turned the world upside down. You know, all of this stuff is just, it's like there's infinite. And then, of course, you know, Chamath Palihapitiya's interview and Sandy Perikilas and, you know, the things that Jaron Lanier says, the investment people. There's so much evidence. There's no evidence to the contrary. You know, it all reminds me, honestly, of those old AmeriQuest mortgage commercial, the Super Bowl commercial. Don't judge too fast. I got blood on my hands, but don't judge too fast. It's like a drug dealer telling you that. Now, let's not jump to conclusions here. It's just insane. Anyway, second hour coming up. Stick around. We'll be right back.